to the visitors. I think there's been sufficient time spent on your recovery program. I'm sure you are recovered by now. I was very careful that you don't start accusing me of unfair labor practices. So I have allowed sufficient time for you to recover after the last two nights working. Hopefully your performance levels will increase and we can continue then to accelerate the pace, which has for some time been quite slow. I take it all of you have copies of documents that have been prepared by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Then can we immediately get into the program then? Perhaps the State Law Advisor can just tell us, Ms. Boyce, what is it that we have before us? I see a number of different documents.
Chairperson, thank you. The first document that is titled Proposals on Clauses 23 and Classification Review Panel is a document that reflects the further changes that the committee has decided to do on some of the clauses yesterday that we had under discussion, as well as the feedback on the time periods that we had to insert in Clause 23 and the access aspect of the control review panel, classified review panel. The second document that you have in front of you is the accountability aspect. That was also, we were requested to look at that of the classification review panel. And the other document that got a number, page number 53, and starts with the heading Attempt Conspiracy and Inducing Another Person to Commit an Offense, that relates to the proposal on Clause 38. And then there's a further document that's got the title Proposed Business Process for Classification, Declassification, and Reclassification of State Information. And that is the proposal that Mr. Glomo and I discussed this morning in relation with the aspects of Section 15 or Clause 15, 17, and 21, and which we want to brief the committee on how we maybe proceed with that aspect and rather do it in this manner, classification, declassification, and reclassification, and with the different headers on that particular aspect. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, I'm advised here that it's a matter of national importance that needs to be addressed before we can proceed further. It is the question of lunch or dinner. I understand that what has been offered is a lunch in the lounge or a dinner in the lounge. Depending which one you take, the other one will be a finger situation. You cannot have both lunch and dinner in the lounge. You can have one. It's a simple situation, Honourable Mr. Lees, but I know it's an important one, so that's why I am putting it now, because we're going to sit this evening.
I'm sure, sir. Is it still conducive?
Yes.
I'm not sure that we were so productive in the evenings. One can be very productive in the evenings. I'm not convinced we were.
From what I'm gathering, Honourable Member, you're suggesting that we have dinner this evening and a finger lunch. I shall then carry that message through to the chef. It will be dinner to dinner and finger lunch. Can we then go over to the State Law Advisor so that we are clear on what document we want to take first? Can you take us through page 53 first. Now it's a one pager, but it's got page 53 on top.
Thank you, Chairperson. Page 53 relates to the amendment to clause 38 in the working document or in the bill that relates to the disclosure of classified and related information. Any person who unlawfully discloses classified information in contravention of this act is guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to imprisonment for a period not less than 3 years, but not exceeding 5 years, except where such disclosure is protected under the Protective Disclosures Act, or Section 159 of the Companies Act, or Jefferson Venema 50, or any, that is in the document, sorry, I think it was just cut off, or any authorized by any other law. You'll find that amendment on page 12 of the combined document. So it will
what
be,
are the actual words that are missing on this page?
It will be paragraph B, authorized by any other law. And that's contained on page 12 of the handout that's headed Proposals on Clauses 23 and Classification Review Panel.
Honourable Member, this thing does not require debate. If it's been properly captured, then this is final. That was the Honourable on.
I beg your indulgence, and I really am sorry to do this. It's not my intention to take us back. And we should have picked this up yesterday and corrected it yesterday. The minimum sentence is there. Can we not agree that that comes out here too?
Honourable members, the document is then finalised.
He needs to type it into his computer.
No, I just want to close the
subject to the cross-referencing of the Honourable Avrasini to check that the wording is in fact what we had agreed to.
It is.
The document will be, this document will be amended to take out the minimum sentence.
Sorry.
Not less than 3 years. And it shall then be in its final form. The state law advisors then instructed to incorporate this into the committee working document as an agreed amendment, so that when we do get to this clause, that we are sure that we don't start debating it over again. Yes, Honourable Man.
There'll be another couple of changes which I don't have a problem, but I just want to highlight them. The reference to they're taken out outside the manner and purposes of this act, which was in the original text. The original text read, any person who discloses classified information outside of the manner and purpose of this act. Is it? Okay, then I'm reading from page 12. Oh, my humblest apology. I'll go out and follow my sword.
And then it is exactly.
I'm not sure whether it is that.
still a there might be no difference in meaning, but the difference of language persists. In that the original bill is for the purpose what I read, which is not here. My computer just went blank.
Honorable Agostini, this particular clause.
The words I read to you are not in here. It might not matter, but I'm just pointing it out to you in case it does. Outside of the manner and purposes of this act. It substituted this clause classified information in contravention of this act. So it's just it's a different language. I don't think it makes much of a difference. I'm just pointing that out to you.
But we have gone that route already, honorable member. This thing has been debated. This thing was resurrected for approval. It had been debated. It had substantial approval at the time it was debated. And it was resurrected yesterday for final approval. So the words that you're complaining or that you're querying, at some early stage it had already been agreed that those words be omitted. And this that you have now on page 53, say for the words that I've included, it is not showing here, authorized by any other law. This is, in fact, what we have agreed to now. Except that the minimum sentence of 3 years, not less than 3 years, that will be deleted. And the state law advisor has then been instructed accordingly to incorporate this into the parliamentary working document so that it shows that it's something that we have already agreed upon. So you can put page 53 away. Yes,
on the issue of the sentences, we're still going to decide on the proportionality of sentences, so we might come back to that 5 years as well. I think that was also, we agreed on that, so I think that 5-year period might also be revisited when we discuss all the offences together.
That is indeed so, honourable member.
Are we closing our discussion on 38? I just had a problem with behaving. Because the only thing that is a contravention is the disclosure of classified information. Related information is not, people go to jail, must be clear what it is. It's the document that says top secret, not what's related to it.
You're about to fall on your sword now, I don't remember. honorable members, there is a late proposal to remove and related. And related is then removed, classified information. The heading will then read disclosure of classified information. State law advisor, take note of that. Last-minute adjustment. Can we put that document at page away now, honourable members? Can we look at another page? Accountability. It's got page 14 on it. You want to be heard, honourable member?
If I may. This is the point raised yesterday by us, that there was a lacuna that none of us had spotted before, namely that provisions should be made for the locus. Where is the panel accountable to? It is accountable to Parliament, and I think that this phrasing is not correct. The Classification Review Panel is accountable not to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, that's where it will go, but you must say to Parliament, and must report on its activities and the performance of its functions at least once a year. So is it Parliament or Assembly, Steve? We took this from 181 sub 6 181 sub 6. And it's done just right, but except for these little considerations. Does it say, does it say assembly in 181 or parliament? Assembly. Assembly. These institutions are accountable to the National Assembly. Okay. But my proposal is that one should read the classification review panel as accountable to the National Assembly and must report on its activities and the performance of its functions at least once a year. Second, that the classification review panel must provide the relevant portfolio committees. No, it must provide... Now, what do we mean with such reports? These are the other reports. Annalise's point... I'm not sure we need sub 2 at all. All we're dealing with is the accountability. It lies to the assembly. Full stop. Delete 2.
When the assembly receives the report, where does it go to?
It goes to the speaker. Everything does.
Right.
And the speaker's office sends to you. I mean, not you anymore.
Are you saying we shouldn't say that?
No. Where else do you ever say that? In a statute, you don't. You don't.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary. If it goes to the National Assembly, it will definitely... What happens with your Inspector General? Your Inspector General's report, they are filed probably with the National Assembly depending on their secrecy, and then referred... Are they not referred to the Joint Standing Committee? And two, I agree, is not relevant, because if there are other reports that are relevant to other portfolio committees, those portfolio committees would request them, and in terms of our general oversight, are entitled to them. Take, for example, the Public Protector's report now that's been filed with the National Assembly, goes to the police, but Justice might also have an interest in that.
Honourable Van Beek.
I just want to make sure, because the point, in any case, Sue is not capturing what we said. I just want to make sure that what we've meant is that the annual report to Parliament must be provided to the relevant portfolio committees. And I just want to make sure that we've captured that somewhere, if we remove it here. If we haven't, then we need to look at it, because we're talking about two types of reports. The one is the reports that go to the JSCI. The other is the annual public report that must be published.
It's never dealt, the minutiae doesn't go into this. I mean, the comparable thing would be the Human Rights Commission, whose many reports are relevant to many committees, you know, because they do socioeconomic rights. And you don't write it in anywhere. That's what the Speaker's Office and the Parliamentary Administration is for.
I repeat, I just want to make sure that we've captured the fact that this board have the obligation to make an annual report available to Parliament that will be published to the public, so that the public know what has happened in terms of secrecy within this department.
Honourable Abrasini.
Thank you. I think both the Honourable Smart and the Honourable Van Wijk are correct. The difference, I mean, the Honourable Smart says this is done ordinarily by Parliament. It's tabled with Parliament, and the Speaker signs it, and it's correct. Here we have a different situation. In that the Portfolio Committee is a statutory body and operates under a law. So it would have an attractive capacity of anything which pertains to it by virtue of its enabling legislation.
The JSCI has its own statute.
It's established by statute, yes.
Unbelievable. No, I didn't know that, and that officially...
Yes, yeah, this is the issue. So it's established... Hey, don't pick... Okay, so it would have a statutory attractive capacity that unless we put something in a different law, everything goes in there. So I think the Honourable Van Wijk is correct that in this specific case the general rule may not apply, and it might be worthwhile to put something to counter that.
Honourable Landers. Chairperson, we may need to redraft this. If we use the word table, when you say table, it says, if effectively that this report must be given to the National Assembly and be made public. And the Honourable Dean Smuts is right. The powers that be here receive it and then decide where it should go to for consideration and deliberation. Okay. What the Honourable Annelies van Wyk is wanting us to ensure in this clause is that first, it must be an annual report dealing with on its activities and the performance of its functions. And then we've agreed that there may be other reports as well, and that those must also be tabled. And that's it. What is here doesn't quite say that. So the word tabled, it must, if it's tabled, then it has a legal implication, Chairperson.
You want to say that all other reports to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence must be tabled in the Assembly. Is that what you want? You want them public, you don't want them public.
Hello.
Honourable members, if you go to page 10, go to page 10 of the thick document now, because now we're going into yesterday's discussion again. And I thought we came to consensus on this yesterday. Yes, Honourable Mania?
Chair, I would think that the Honourable van Wyk's concern would be taken care of if we amend page 10, sub 2, and use the term table. In other words, delete submit and include table. So in sub 1, we make provision for an annual report. In sub 2, we argue that that report should be submitted to Parliament. If we delete submitted and include table, then that report will be tabled in Parliament and presumably then referred to the relevant committees.
You want to get out of that agreement? So amendment to the agreement. Honourable members, we're going to get taken through the document. Is there further amendment to this particular clause? Can we first do the amendment? Okay. So, those honourable members, please take note there. The document that you have before you that was handed out today, the one with the many pages, if you go to page 10 of that document, and you go down towards the bottom, you'll see a bracket 2. It reads classification. The review panel must submit, and the word submit must be changed to table. Tabled in the past tense, or table?
Table.
Table in the single sense. And that's the only alteration you want to make to your agreement. Okay. The Honourable Mania, then I can hear you. Is there anything else you wanted to be heard? Okay. Now, what is the status of this accountability document then? Because Honourable Smuts, you were the one that was talking to this.
Of course. It's supposed to appear in the provisions dealing with the review panel. It was a proposal which we made yesterday.
Two
now falls away. And you must put one wherever we think it
wherever
fits best.
We have a loose document now which says accountability. Yes, it would be nice.
I just want to suggest that 2 then falls away because there's no need for it any longer. And then that this 1 goes wherever it should be within the bill. Oh. Thank you.
We support that proposal too.
You want it on page 10?
Just to read for you, Arnold, the where it's going to go is a simple matter. The single page document, which has got 14 on top of it, the bracket 2 is going to be deleted in its entirety. The bracket 1 is going to read, the classification review panel is accountable to the National Assembly and must report on its activities and the performance of its functions at least once a year. I think assembly is repetitious there. And I think the removal of Joint Standing Committee is what you've agreed upon. Is that correct, Honourable Members? And then the heading will remain. And I don't think the bracket one will remain. And the state law advisor will then put this. Is there any suggestions where so that we don't argue that it was put in the wrong place? Okay. The document with the many pages on page 10, it will be a subheading that precedes the reporting. It will be a subheading now that says accountability. The state law advisor follow that process. Honourable members, you may now disregard that accountability document. Let's go to the thick document now. And let's go, as we agreed yesterday, only to those things that we have asked to be addressed. Can the state law advisor just take us through this document? It's got 12 pages.
Established may only be open to some doubt. This is generally what applies to a general relief chairperson. And then we state that the court has a discretion to grant or refuse an order, even if the other requirements for granting of an order have been met. So the court has a general discretion in that regard. Then the case of Bruma versus Minister of Social Development, which was heard in the Western Cape High Court, had to determine whether a court could condone non-compliance with time frames, time periods that were set, that are set by Section 782 of PAIA. Section 782 of PAIA provides that a requester that has been unsuccessful in an internal appeal may within 30 days apply to court for appropriate relief in terms of Section 82. The court noted that Section 32(1) of the Constitution confers upon every person the right of access to any information held by the state. In response, PAIA was enacted particularly to give effect to the provisions of this section of the Constitution. And in terms of Section 11 of PAIA, access to a record of a public body must be given if the requester complies with the procedural requirements of PAIA, unless it is refused on one of the specific grounds for refusal. The court pointed out that Section 782 of PAIA does not provide for condemnation, nor does PAIA state either expressly or implicitly that non-compliance with the time period cannot be condoned. It stated that Section 782 of PAIA must be construed in the context of Section 32(1)(a), read with Sections 34, 36, 39, 2, and the 92 of the Constitution. It found that Section 34 of the Constitution guarantees everyone the right of access to courts, which right may be limited only in terms of law of general application, to the extent that the limitation is reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society. The court stated that Section 782 of PAIA must be interpreted in such a way that it does not take away or interfere with an individual's right to approach the courts. The court held that non-compliance with the time period provided for in Section 782 of PAIA may be condoned on good cause shown. So basically, Chairperson, if legislation doesn't expressly say you cannot condone, the court has a discretion. And then Zondi J was deciding for the court in that matter, stated that it is tried law that in considering applications for condemnation, the court must exercise its discretion, taking all facts into account in a manner that is fair to both sides. In such an inquiry, the relevant factors may include the nature of the relief sought, the extent and cause of the delay, the effect of the delay on the administration of justice and other litigants, the importance of the issue to be raised in the intended application and the prospect of success, or whether it is in the interest of justice to grant condemnation. In this specific case, Chair, you would note that it was a condemnation of a delay in bringing the application before court. But our view is that the same considerations would apply to an urgent application, Chair. The court listed other considerations for condemnation for a delay in bringing proceedings before court, which are not relevant for our discussion. And then we say it would be necessary when bringing an urgent application in the instance of the clause that was considered by the committee, to first approach the head of an organ of state to decide on the matter on a shorter period than that determined by the circumstances, on a period as determined by the circumstances of agency of the situation. Should the head of an organ of state refuse or fail to decide on the matter within that period, then the applicant would, in our view, be justified in bringing an urgent application, even though the time period prescribed in legislation has not expired. The decision that we referred to of Bruma, that was of the High Court of the Western Cape, which refused condemnation, was set aside by the Constitutional Court, Chairperson, on the basis that the High Court's consideration of the condemnation application was academic when it concluded that Section 782 of PAIA is unconstitutional. So basically, the Constitutional Court said the Cape High Court did not have to decide that issue since it decided that Section 782 of PAYA was unconstitutional. The Constitutional Court, however, emphasized that the decision was set aside not because condemnation should have been granted, but because no order should have been made on the application in light of the conclusion reached by the High Court. The Constitutional Court, therefore, did not deal with the reasoning of the condemnation decision of the High Court. And in our view, that reasoning would still be applicable to condemnation decisions in respect of time frames that are set by legislation. And finally, Chair, we say it may be necessary for the committee to consider whether to include a clause in the bill to expressly provide for a court to be approached on an urgent basis to condone non-compliance with time frames that are set in this legislation, where there is urgency with regard to imminent and serious public safety or environmental risk, and the public interest in the disclosure of the information clearly outweighs the harm that will arise from the disclosure. That is all. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I do agree with the conclusion that we need to, if we want to be able to, the word is not condone, to anticipate the relief pending the statutory deadline, we need to have legislation along the lines that the parliamentary law advisor was suggesting. We need to empower the court to do so. So I do agree with the conclusion. The conclusion is at odd with everything said before, because the rationale of Bruma could not possibly apply to what we are discussing here. There is a right which is violated, it's a constitutional right, and the key to an urgent application is the violation of a right. So obviously in the field of condonation, we're not talking about condonation, we're talking about anticipation, complete different animal. In the field of condonation, you cannot a tight deadline which infringes upon a constitutional right. The first criterion given by the law advisor for an injunction, which we all know about, is the violation of a right. That's what the prima facie case is all about. That right doesn't exist in nature or in abstract. Exists in law and in law only. When the deadline has not expired yet, there is no right has been infringed. So I do agree with the conclusion, unless we put something there which enables the court to anticipate the deadline and give an urgent interdict, a mandamus pending the deadline, no urgent relief will be able to be granted by court, no matter how urgent the matter is in nature rather than in law.
Okay, I think we can dispose of this quite quickly without having long deliberations. I think the suggestion, the conclusion is something that we should look at a wording, whether it's condemnation or anticipation, but I think that's useful that we could ask the law advisors just to look at that, to draft a clause along those lines of anticipating relief, and let's move on. I think that we can debate all day how everyone brings an urgent application and that, but I think we shouldn't waste too much time on that.
Just one clarity. Are you saying that the law, in any event, is adequately covering this scenario that we were contemplating yesterday, notwithstanding your proposal?
Chair, the court said because legislation doesn't say expressly that it cannot condone, it has a discretion to condone. So it basically covers it, but we can err on the side of caution by including such a clause here.
Honourable members, what is the instruction?
To look into the creation of a clause along the lines of the conclusion reached by the legal advisors to anticipate the relief that is sought. and we can look at that exact wording, whether it's a condemnation or an anticipation clause, as what Dr. Ambassini has suggested. But just to belt and braces, the court is obviously has inherent right to look at this, but I don't think we've got enough time now to go into all the details of whether the existing law covers that. And that. Let's use a belts and braces approach. We're in at idem and in agreement about that.
Can we proceed then on the document?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on page one of the document, clause 23, at the top there is the clause as agreed to, and then at the bottom is a proposal of insertion of two sub-clauses, the one dealing with the time periods that were discussed yesterday. Sub-clause 4 will then read, the head of an organ of state must, A, within 14 days of receipt of the request contemplated in subsection 3A, Roman 2, grant the request for the declassification of classified information, or B, within 30 days of receipt of the request contemplated in subsection 3A, Roman 1, grant the request for declassification of classified information. Page 2.
Yeah, that's what has been said here has been properly captured, the two scenarios. And you say you want a third scenario now, the C is what you've been asked to look at?
That's correct, Chairperson. We will provide the committee with a draft clause on that.
On page one, honourable members, right at the bottom, your bracket B will be followed by a bracket C, and your bracket C is what the state law advisor has been asked to deal with in terms of the urgent applications scenario.
Based on 4A and B, should be grant or deny. On sub 4A and B, where it says grant, should be grant or deny, both on A and B.
Yeah?
Chairperson 3, we say it must grant, the head of organ of state must grant a request if it relates to Roman 1 and 2.
Thank you, Honourable. Are you understanding it, Honourable? It's a positive action. It's a positive step that needs to be taken. There's no deny. It cannot be. If those things exist, then so deny doesn't fit in. Can we proceed?
It's just an omission. We will insert the CA. Thank you. Listen, then on page 2 at the top, the review, that will become then sub-clause 5. I apologize, there's a sub-clause 6 instead of 5. It must read sub-clause 5. If an application for a request referred to in subsection 1 is received, the head of an organ of state must conduct a review of the classified information held by that organ of state relating to the request for declassification.
Honourable Landers.
Chair, can we include in this sub-clause, remember we said it's an automatic review. It kicks in immediately. So after the words, the head of the organ of state must, and then insert with immediate effect. My fear here, Chair, is if we leave it like this, he could wait 3 weeks in his conducting of the review. Whereas if we say with immediate effect, we are signaling our intention as the legislature that it must be immediate and therefore automatic.
that effect. I would just caution that you might not be putting everything almost on an urgent basis, but let's see what are the views.
And 23.1 refers to an access for information which might not be the 23.3, where you've got imminent serious public safety and environmental risk. So we need to just be careful that you might be placing an onerous task on the head of an organ state to do all requests for classified documentation where that access is. They must all be done on an urgent and immediate basis. Is that...
This is the Director General. You know, other than reviewing this classified information, he's got a load of other work and could comfortably come and say, well, you know, I wasn't doing only reviews of classified information. I had a department to run. And so only got back to it in 6 months' time. The point made by Mr. Swat Jefferson.
Yes, Mr. Abedusini.
Okay, a few things. First of all, I think we must change the words head of organ of state with the words classifying authority, which the classifying authority is defined in the definition and includes either the organ of state under A or any other official to whom the organ of state, the head of the organ of state has delegated the authority to classify in writing.
I actually thought we had this debate yesterday. I really thought we did. We entered into this debate and we spent a long time on whether it is the what the right wording here should be. And I thought we actually decided on the head of the organ of state as the final responsible person.
May I finish?
You could.
Yes, Honourable Epstein.
Because otherwise, if it is, you got A and B in the classifying authority. You've got the head of the organ of state, and you have the somebody else other than the organ of state. If it is done by somebody else, the matter needs to go to the organ of state and needs to be seized by the organ, by the head of the organ of state. And we eliminate in this provision the power to delegate. While in the definition of classification authority, we have given the power of delegating by limiting it to the head of the organ of state, there is no possibility of delegating. And I don't think that this intention, in light of what the Honorable Landers was mentioning, the DG may have something else to do. That's the first point. The second point, it seems to me, I think the Honorable Swartz was pointing it out, that we really have two channels here. One which is quite clear, which is the sub 3, and the 3 and 4 come together. Now, what about all that which affects rights of other people, but doesn't go to the level of being a substantial breach of law or serious threat to public health and safety. Then the third point, and I want to raise it here because we have it in our amendments. Well, the second point is that in case of substantial contravention or failure to comply with the law, or in case of imminent and serious public safety and environmental risk, in those cases you've got 4, which means 14 days and 30 days, immediate effects, bang, bang, it's happened, it's all spelled out. In the other cases, it is not clear how long it takes, and perhaps we should have a provision 5, which gives a framework for those cases. Am I being clear? Then my last point raised on this, and I'm raising it here because we're having this discussion here. My amendment was further down under the court. We suggest that whenever the declassification of information is necessary to prove the innocence of a person under criminal charges, that information is to be declassified. Any disculpatory information is to be declassified. It's a difficult call because on the one hand you've got the public interest, on the other hand you've got the individual right, but you cannot send an innocent man to jail in the name of the public interest. I mean, these are one of those difficult things in which one tests the civility of a nation. And it happened in the past. There are cases where disculpatory evidence was classified, and only after 20 years it was declassified, and the man came out of jail having served for 20 years as an innocent person. So I would like consideration to be given to the provision that when the disculpatory information necessary to the criminal trial must be declassified on the same basis as the 3, 1, and 2.
Honorable members, yesterday when we dealt with this 46, which we borrowed from Pyre, it was quite clear what we wanted. Question I'm putting to you, is this what we wanted? Because we had the debate. We had the debate. The only thing that needs to be specified now is this is what you want. You are asked, the law advisors, to go and capture this thing. Now, is this what you wanted? Is this 5? Is this what you wanted? If it's not what you wanted, can you change it to the right thing and that we can move on?
Chair, I think the sentiments have been captured correctly, but the Honourable Landers raised the further issue relating to whether it's specific enough on the automatic review and how long that will take. And I think that is a valid consideration, that we need to insert in 5 a similar time provision, because he correctly points out that that automatic review might be indefinite. We've got certain time periods for the 1 and 2, which we're in agreement with, but it would be useful to add in a time period there. And he suggested with immediate effect, that might be too constraining, but we should put in some period. We've got 14 days, we've got 30 days. Should one not put in? You can either put in within a reasonable time, but I think that's too vague. I full appreciation for his sense of urgency and immediacy, although the other sub-clauses of the Override 46 have been covered. And let's think of a sufficient time period. Maybe you've got 30 days, maybe within 45 days or something like that, which then gives 14, 30, 45.
Honourable Mania.
Thank you, Chair. It also seems to me that there's merit to the Honourable Ambrosini's proposal that we include a new subclause 5, or even perhaps a subclause 4C, providing for cases other than cases set out in 3, 1, and 2, and perhaps just set out a 30-day period. Then the clause would be perfectly aligned, in my view, with Pyre. It's a relatively simple insertion.
Within a reasonable time, having regard for the 14-day and the 30-day period set out in the watch name above. Is that what? It's not. I'm just worried now about setting more dates now, you see. Because this is not meant to be urgent. you don't like within a reasonable time, which has got lots of meaning when it comes to court. But what you are saying, if I understand the arguments correctly, is that it's not 40, it's not 30, it should be more than 30. So, is it not having regard to those two dates that, that this performance should take place? Because then you don't have to set the time, you don't have to set the date. It would just link it to something which is tangible. Honourable members, it's either within a reasonable time, which has got lots of meaning in court. I've got no problem with within a reasonable time. Can I propose within a reasonable time, and you can flag it till then? Within a reasonable time, and you can 30 days later, you flag it, you can come back. But I think once you read up on a reasonable time, you'll see that a reasonable time is... We can come back to tunnel members.
We can get an idea of the flow of the different time periods, how long it will take.
So where is it the reasonable time you would like?
Mr. Ambrosini raises the point that the bill allows for the head of organ of state to delegate his authority to classify to someone else. That is true. But the bill also says that the head of organ of state retains accountability for any decision taken in terms of such delegated authority. That's the first point. The second point I want to make is that whilst the authority to classify may be delegated, the authority to review such classification is not delegated in terms of the bill. And so the obvious person to then act as set out in this clause would be the head of the organ of state and not the person to whom the authority may be delegated.
You're creating an environment.
Is it German?
Mr. Landers.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Honourable.
May I direct your attention to clause 46 sub 6, which will need to be coordinated. I've got problems with this clause, but I'm not raising them now. 46 sub 6, which says the classification authority or the director general of the agency must declassify information. Now here the power to declassify is given to the classification authority. Yeah, I did just say, I mean, then you need to change this one, and there are another couple of them throughout the bill where the classification authority is given the power to declassify. And one must wonder which one carries greater wisdom between the two approaches. And that's not because I believe in decentralization.
Can the state law advisor take us further, please?
Chairperson, if I may continue. Page 2, the classification review panel. We were asked to look at the axis on the establishment of the classification review panel, and we had to come up with several proposals on that. The first one we looked at is the Inspector General. We considered the clause in the, or the act, the section within the act, and we have drafted the draft proposal on that in contained in page 2, 3, 2 and 3. The access that is foreseen in this particular instance relates to a very wide scope of functions and powers that the classification review panel may then perform, including, for instance, access to premises. They can search, so it's a search and seize function as well, if you look at that particular proposal. On page 3, we've highlighted also what must happen if there's classified information received and it must be disclosed. And this, we also indicated, should be discussed, whether it's a function of the CRP and whether if the bank must be tasked with the power to disclose the circumstances. Must I take the committee through the whole proposal? Jefferson?
Is the proposal contained basically on 2 pages?
Yes, Jefferson, and then there's a proposal page on page 4, proposal 2, that relates to the auditor general, similar type of provision. And on page 5, there's a proposal 3 that the committee asked us to look at the promotion of access to information for a similar provision. On page 6, there's a proposal 4 and a proposal 5 for a more simplified type of clause on the access to be given.
What was the last that you said, the more simple?
A more simplified version of the access proposal on that.
Page
6. It will be proposal 4 or proposal 5.
Can you take us through that one first? The simple proposal.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 6, proposal 4, it will then read, no organ of state or employee of an organ of state may interfere with, hinder or obstruct the classification review panel or any member thereof, or a person appointed under section, and that section will be dealt with when we deal with the particular sections where the classification review panel will go into the bill, in the performance of its, his or her functions. That relates to proposal 4. Then there's a further simplified one, or, and that's proposal 5, also on page 6. No person or organ of state may interfere with the functioning of the classification review panel.
Can you take us to the prior one?
On page 5 at the bottom, proposal 3, if the classification review panel informs the head of an organ of state that the panel wishes to review classified information kept by, sorry, Chairperson, that of must come out, that organ of state, the head of an organ of state must render such reasonable assistance free of charge as is necessary to enable that classification review panel to comply with, and then the section will also be inserted. That will deal with the functions of the classification review panel.
What's on the other side of the page is not part of that? Top of page 6?
Yes, I apologize, Chairperson. On page 6 at the top, there's a sub. Clause 2, if it is apparent on receipt of a request for access that it should have been made to another organ of state, the head of an organ of state concerned must render such assistance as is necessary to enable the classification review panel to identify the appropriate organ of state.
Honourable members, allow me to assist you in your thinking now. I think that the proposal set out on 5, the prior one, and the two short ones on page 6 is what really you are asking. The proposal 4 seems to be a little bit better than proposal 5. And if I were a betting person, I would say that it comes down, without looking at all these search and seizure processes now, where we might be creating another institution that we might one day be. We might one day have difference of opinion with. I would strongly suggest that we are looking at the proposal forms on page 6 and the prior proposal at the bottom of page 5. And I would say that if you were going to put your money on one of the two of that proposals, you would probably be a winner. Now, I don't know about the subsection 2 of the prior thing, whether we need to capture that. I think it's each organ of state for himself. What we were trying to capture was there must be no interference. And I think that the prior one and even the one on proposal 4 is adequately capturing that thing. Can I hear you, honorable members? Because if we don't, we're going to go into a whole other and more powers are being added here now. Honorable Landers, you wanted to be heard.
No, Chair, we agree with you, and we find favor with that. I do have one question, which is I'm curious about. Why must it be, who charges for this? Because here it says free of charge. This is a panel put in place by a statute of parliament.
The Pyre one. I suppose the wording is coming from Pyre.
Does it?
Yeah.
Free of charge. Really?
Okay. I was just curious. Yeah. I don't have a problem with it. Perhaps the wording is coming from Pyre.
Okay. Proposal 3, 1, and 2, and proposal 4.
Honourable members. You got what you want. Why are you having difficulty deciding now? Mr. Honorable Mania, can we hear you on this thing?
Thank you, Chair. I must admit that I rather like the Inspector General's proposal. There doesn't seem to be any limits there. But we could look at a combination in Proposal 1 of A and... 1A and 9, or alternatively, if we're looking at Proposal 4, look at Proposal 4, but add on subclause 9 from Proposal 1, because Proposal 4 doesn't deal... Proposal 4 is fairly strong, but doesn't specifically deal with access. So if you look at subclause 9... of Proposal 1, it just simply says no access to intelligence, information or premises contemplated, etc., may be withheld from the classification review panel on any ground.
Honorable Anders?
You see, Chairperson, there is a distinction here. What the Inspector General is entitled and authorized to do is to even look at operations, projects, names of sources. Now, if you're opening that up for access by the panel as well, you're asking for a lot of trouble. No. You can't. We want the panel to look at classified information. All right, that's what we wanted to do. The point where you want the panel to be able to know what are the operations of NIA currently and so on. Yeah. It was not what we intended at all with the panel, Jefferson.
Chair, are the operations of NIA classified? The review panel is supposed to look at presumably all classification on a random sounding basis to see whether the power to classify is being abused. How do you do that? No, just explain, I ask openly. How do you prevent? No, it isn't an answer to say to me, are there stuff that they mustn't see? How are you going? Then you have what Dr. Ambrosini argued, the head-on contrast situation.
that there's stuff classified which you will never even know about, because you will never know about the operation. You'll never know about the doctor.
Honourable members, the matter that was being debated yesterday was what happens if the review panel is hindered or is refused access or is not allowed to carry out its functions as set out in this bill. And this is the answer. No organ of state may interfere or hinder with it or obstruct it. That's what we asked for. We asked for a number of proposals, and I think the state law advisor was over enthusiastic and brought us some very, very luxurious ones. But you are not been asked here in this piece of legislation to set up another LEA, a law enforcement agency, that's going to be running in and getting interdicts, and this is not your receiver of revenue. And so I don't know whether you are now interested in extending more powers to this institution, or whether you just want to see that this institution is not interfered when it does its work. We're given access. The Honourable Abrasini first, and then
I was interjecting something irrelevant.
Honourable Mate, this is made a mistake.
Chair, I mean, our intention is that and we agree to this, that the panel would have unlimited access to classified information. But the Honourable Landers' response suggests that he contemplates that there would be limits to their access, despite us agreeing that members of the panel and the staff will be vetted.
Honourable Van Wyk, take us forward, please.
Listen, I agree with what you said, and that's why we've asked for different options yesterday as well. DA's proposed, let's look at the Inspector General's powers. We propose let's also look at the Auditor General's powers so that we can see how we can craft this. I really think we now... It wasn't our intention. I mean, the intention is exactly what you say, is to make sure that this board can do its work. And by the proposal that you've mentioned, we are achieving that. I really think we must be careful to go overboard on this.
Honourable members, help me, please. I see in proposal 4 a very, very beautiful set of words that eloquently captures what we are trying to do. We can add a few full stops later on when we get back to it. But you must understand, when you talk about the Auditor General, you are talking about a chapter, whatever it is, person that was meant to do a whole range of other things. When you're talking about the Inspector General, you are talking about a constitutionally recognized entity, and that for it to carry out its functions, it's got some serious powers. We did not intend that this panel should have any of those powers that those people have. What we merely wanted to see by looking at those things is what, when it comes to access, what type what can we learn from that legislation? And I think it is right here in 4. And if you want to be safe, go with the PIA thing. But I think since 2000, when the PIA era started, I think you've learned a lot about PIA. and you know a lot about fire. So why don't you be innovative and go with your own proposal, which is captured in form? Because, you know, we're taking so many things on fire, and it's not bad. But I think this one in four, if I were to put my money on something, it would be this one in four. Yes, I'm...
Just this is becoming a gambling parable.
Jad, I sense you have a very strong preference for proposal four.
He didn't that. I said I put my money on this one if I was a betting man.
Can I make an alternative proposal, which is a compromise? And the compromise would be to stick with proposal four, to take the existing clause to make that an A, and then to use a variant of the subclause 9 on page 3, which relates to the Inspector General, and just simply to say, no access to classified information may be withheld from the classification review panel on any ground. That then is clear.
You're reading, Honourable Member? Page 3?
I'm looking at
the bottom of page 3.
Page 6, proposal 4, and page 3.
The bottom.
Subclause 9 at the bottom. But I'm proposing a variant. And the variant is simply, no access to classified information may be withheld from the classification review panel on any ground. Simple as that.
That's fair.
I don't want you to repeat it. You agree with them, because I'm going to implement this thing now.
All I'm saying that it seems to capture exactly what everyone seems to say.
Yes, so I'm going to implement it. We don't need to debate this thing any further now. Honourable members, the agreement then is that proposal 4 will be an A. The proposal as it stands there will be an A. And the B part will be what is captured on page 3 of this document, right at the bottom, bracket 9, with the necessary amendments to that subparagraph that the Honourable Mania has drawn our attention to. So it's access, not to intelligence, but access to classified information. And the idea is you can't withhold it from the panel on any grounds. Has the state law advisor got that? And that will be the B to that particular clause. And then the state law advisor will put it in the text where it needs to be fitted in. So we don't have to come back to us for approval. All you need to come back is to show that it's been put in the text of the clause 17 at the appropriate place. Can we proceed then, Honourable Members, the rest of the document?
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 6, the heading is Appointment of Staff. That clause was agreed that we take out the subclause 2 of that particular clause. It's reflected there in square brackets.
Is that because it's been moved somewhere else?
Yes, Chairperson, it's just to show that we've taken out that clause 2 and the appointment of staff clause will move as soon as we've settled the classification review panel. We haven't yet provided for it in the final draft. It was suggested yesterday by the committee that it must move down, more lower down in the classification review panel provision.
So it's actually a question of cut. It's actually cut. You intend to paste it somewhere. It's not deleted. Because, you know, us MPs, we understand when you see these dark stuff, these dark brackets, and that things are being deleted. But what you're saying, that this one has been cut, it's going to be inserted somewhere.
Chairperson, it will be provided for where we provide for the members. We insert the staff will be also remunerated. Yes.
And it would be still understood. And we can proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Then, Constitution and Appointment of Classification Review Panel on page 7. The proposal is that the subclause 1 be deleted and that the following subclause be substituted. The Minister, on the recommendation of the National Assembly, must appoint the members of the Classification Review Panel. Chairperson, I believe the double V on the first sentence should be actually 5 members instead of I think there's an omission there. Subclause 2, the National Assembly must recommend persons A, nominated by a committee of the National Assembly proportionally composed of members of all parties represented in the Assembly, B, approved by the Assembly by a resolution adopted with a supporting vote of a majority of the members of the Assembly, and 3, due regard must be given to the following principles, namely A, participation by the public in the nomination process, B, transparency and openness, and C, the publication of a short list of candidates for appointment. Chairperson, then at the bottom, subclause, again, omission there, it must be actually 5. There's a double 2 there at the bottom, I apologize. It's the last one, last subclause, that reads, the classification review panel is headed by a chairperson who must either be admitted attorney or advocate with at least 10 years legal experience. Chairperson, on page 8. It will become then subclause 6, just to take out the words other and to put in the other 4 members. And then the change was in paragraph A to take off the word the. Chairperson, then on page 8, disqualification from membership as agreed is to insert the agreed paragraph H. It's 1H, has been convicted of an offence in the Republic other than an offence committed prior to 10 May 1994, associated with political objectives, and was sentenced to imprisonment without an option of confinement. Chairperson, page 9, removal of office. It was to take out the words, the National Assembly adopted the resolution calling for that person's removal, and to provide for a vote. If there's a vacancy in the classification review panel, that's at the bottom of page 9, subclause 5, that vacancy must be filled as soon as practicable in accordance with the section, and that will be the section where you make the appointment, chairperson. Then on the bottom of page 9, remuneration of members and staff, that's the one that's agreed to, and chairperson, that is where you will have on page 10 at the top, members of the classification review panel and staff of the classification review panel must be paid such remuneration that reflects from the previous clause that we've discussed just now. Chairperson, on page 10, meetings of the classification review panel, at the bottom there, subclause 4, was the issue of what happens when there's a vacancy on the panel. So it will read, any decision taken by the classification review panel, we've taken out the word valid and said is not invalid merely by reason of a vacancy on the panel provided that the required quorum of is present at that meeting. Then chairperson, on page 10, reporting, we will effect the change to subclause 2 where we will take out the word submit and institute of inserts table, and then subclause 3 we've taken out the words through and indicated that it must be furnished any other report as the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence requests. Chairperson, subclause 4 is just to take out the word any and to insert the word the. And then on page 11, the transitional agreement is just to insert the words subject to section 20 and to create a further addition that will be that. Chairperson, then, on page 11, we were asked yesterday to just look at the offences and to not forget that we need to provide for it, so we just have it here so that when we deal with the offences, we can have that on the bio offence. A head of an organ of state who willfully or in a grossly negligent manner fails to comply with the provisions of this Act commits an offence and is liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years.
Definition.
And then the definition, we were also asked not to forget about the definition, and we proposed in line with prior request for access in relation to classified information means a request for access to a record of a public body in terms of Section 11 of the Promotion of Access to Information Act. And that's the extent, Chairperson.
Point of order, yes.
Before I ask to speak, are we going to have lunch?
To adjourn soon.
Soon.
I want. I don't vouch for lunch. I vouch for adjourning. Yes.
Okay.
So.
All right. Then can I address you on this? I know that we said certain things to the drafters and they attempted to capture our intentions in what is contained here, which deals with the appointment of members of the Classification Review Panel. We've actually put in too much, Chairperson. I would propose that we begin with where it says sub 3, due regard must be given to, and we on page 7, I beg your pardon. And it should read as follows, and this would be 1 instead of 3. Due regard having been given to, in the words, the following principles namely come out: A, participation by the public in the nomination process; B, transparency and openness; and the public, see the publication of shortlists of candidates for appointment, comma. The Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence must table a list of 5 persons in the National Assembly for its approval. And then, the next one says, the National Assembly must, by a resolution adopted with a supporting vote of a majority of its members, submit the list of 5 persons to the minister for appointment. And then the rest of the clause carries on as it is. All that's above what is now sub 3 can fall away. The reason I'm saying that, Chairperson, you see, it becomes complicated when you read it as it is. A minister on the recommendation of the National Assembly. I know that you're trying to insert here what is in the Constitution, but it actually makes it clumsy. Okay? And then in 2 it says the National Assembly must recommend persons. And again, so what is it doing? Is it merely recommending? And because it's recommended, the minister doesn't have to appoint. Nominated by a committee of the assembly proportionally composed of members of all parties, when in fact we're talking about the JSCI. So that 2A is really superfluous and irrelevant. If we have agreed that it is the JSCI that will do the interviews and table in the National Assembly the list of 5 persons, and that would be my proposal, Chairperson. My humble apologies to the drafters.
We'll have to see me.
Yeah. Let me just for start and say that Mr. Landers has now has spotted what Steve Swart spotted, and that is that reference in 2A should not be to a committee of the Assembly proportionately composed, but to a Joint Standing Committee. And I didn't spot that. But for the rest, I really want to defend this. It's what we all know. It unpacks it, step it verbatim from the Constitution. It unpacks the process that we all know. And why on earth, for the sake of a slight abbreviation, depart from a process that sets it out with absolute clarity and that we all know? The President, on the recommendation of the National Assembly, must appoint. The National Assembly must recommend persons nominated by a committee, approved by the... But Luella, it precisely achieves the clarity. It precisely achieves the clarity. What, are you proposing that the entire thing must kick off with the words, regard having been given to? No, man.
Honourable members, little did you know that you are very much in agreement with each other. I'll draw your attention to that later. I want to hear the Honourable Sini very shortly, and then I would want to hear the Honourable Swat, and then I want to make an announcement.
First of all, we are cutting into eating time here. Secondly, I listen very carefully, and I mean, I never thought that the Honourable Landers was a drafter, but I think it's very elegant. I mean, I like it. It follows right, it's clear, it's got everything which needs to be there, and just does the job, which is what drafting is supposed to be. I frankly don't have a problem with that.
I told you, I'll draw your attention to the fact that you are all very much in agreement. And you're going to confirm that, Honorable Swat. Proceed.
Just on this wording, as to how far, I do understand Mr. Lanis is making some positive suggestions. What we need to decide is whether we follow the wording of the Constitution or not. That is the decision we need to take.
You'll argue about it over lunch, and you'll come back with the right wording when we reconvene, and we shall now adjourn until 2:01.
Of the resolution of the House, we must finish.
And if we meet on a Friday and we sit only from 9 till 12 every Friday from now on, we will not finish. And the idea then is, where do we build in the time to sit? The thinking is, once the committee start to sit in earnest and the house, time becomes very difficult to find, particularly when justice starts to sit. And most of the members here from the opposition also serves on justice, including Mr. Landers, that chairs that committee. And so, while we have the time, we are going to have to make use of it. So either you're going to sit on Saturday, as we agreed, or we're going to sit on Monday to make up that time. Honorable Landers.
Chair, we are scheduled to meet on Tuesday and Wednesday, definitely.
Honorable Van Wyk.
Chairperson, I don't expect the program to be changed to fit in individuals, including myself, but the fact of the matter is, my committee has shifted its oversight program because of the commitments that we've had here this week. And we're starting next week. I can't expect not to be there, and I can't expect to be available. We're starting on Monday. Depends, the same story. Not only justice members on this committee. That's the problem.
I'm in a similar position, Chair, and we have Defence Committee oversight next week, including Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
Are you talking, Honourable Member? Are you?
Sorry, everyone, seem to do it informally. Now, the problem with commitments is that one's trying to schedule them around other commitments, and since Monday was open, I scheduled tons of things on Monday.
Then others of us must then accept the Saturday. I'd much rather not, but it sounds like we'll have to do.
Honourable Member, my commitment, unfortunately, is to see that we sit in the periods where we don't disrupt the other committees as much as we can. It's a discussion I've had with the authorities at Parliament. And it was on that basis when this program for this week was agreed to that we had included Saturday. Honourable members, why you ponder with that obstacle? Can we proceed and we can address that thing later on again? Honourable Kutsi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I, with respect, remind you of an undertaking that you've made last night, that with the beginning of today's discussions, you will allow a 5-minute discussion on the announcement that Honourable Landers is going to make regarding the whistleblowers.
Honourable What's going on now, honourable members? Nobody here, how could the committee have agreed to that? Okay. So you want to say something, Mr. Thomas? I'm going to draw our attention to the legislation, that how the bill has gone out of its way to deal with the whistleblower problem. Then you may proceed, Honourable Lord.
Yes, Chairperson, as you no doubt know, we had announced our intention to introduce an amendment to the bill that seeks to make the bill in line with our whistleblower legislation. And to that end, we proposed a clause that says the following: any person who unlawfully discloses classified information in contravention of this act is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, except, and this is where the protection kicks in for whistleblowers, where such disclosure is A, protected under the Protected Disclosures Act, or Section 159 of the Companies Act, or authorized by any other law. Chairperson, we believe that that suffices to protect and fulfill the demands of many people, that this bill does nothing to protect whistleblowers.
That was nice and short. And can we then proceed, honourable members? No. Ms. Boyce, I take it you have finished with your presentation, eh? Okay. Now, I've got a document in front of me that says national security. I'm not sure. The architect's name is not on the document.
It was my redraft that I circulated yesterday.
Yes, Honourable, my name.
Chair, there's a document which we have not dealt with, which was handed out this morning in the package from the State Law Advisor, and that's a document with a page 13 entitled Proposed Business Process for Classification, Declassification, and Reclassification of State Information. We have not dealt with that document.
Ms. Boyce.
That is correct, Chairperson. That was handed out as a result of the instruction to look at clause 15, 17, and 21. And as a result of that, Mr. Glomo and I had a discussion this morning, and it was proposed that maybe we should look at this at a later stage when we look at the bill as a whole, and maybe we can consider looking at the particular headings that we've got there, classification, declassification, reclassification, and maybe then look at how we can package the bill properly that the information will then flow and that people will know how to deal with the bill properly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Amania.
On a lighter note, I wonder if Mr. Dloma could perhaps repair his bug in the Honourable Van Rooyen's microphone. Perhaps the technicians could do something about it this evening. Chair, just on the actual substance before us, I mean, I think that it makes sense for us to repackage the bill so that it to some extent reflects the workflow. And I presume that this will be that we will carry out this process at a later stage. But just as a preliminary comment, it may be a good idea to create a specific section dealing with circumstances under which you may not classify, and to be absolutely explicit. That's already in the bill. It really would just be a question of rearranging a part of Section 17, but presumably this is something that we will debate later.
Honourable members, do you want to say anything more about these titles that are on this page 13? Or do you want to follow the proposal of the Honourable Manion, that is to look at whether the bill needs to be repackaged at some later stage, and then this may be of significance. Remember, if I might remind you, we had spent considerable time trying to join clauses 17 and 21 into one particular clause that would deal with classification, reclassification, and declassification conditions for. And the feeling at some stage was that because the clause covers so much ground and so many pages, that perhaps it would be better looking at sort of subheadings and subcategories and to see whether that particular clause cannot be rearranged so that it reads and flows better. And I think this page 13 is an attempt to give some guidance. When you look at what is in the present clause 17, whether they cannot be packaged under these various headings with these various points that are made here. So on the classification, I would imagine that you would look at the authority to classify, the methods of classifying, the levels and so forth and so on. The question I'm putting to you, honourable members, are we going to do that process now, or are you going to subject? Because I hear the Honourable Mania is now going beyond Clause 17. He's also referring to Clause 15 and some other clause too. And the question I'm putting to you, do you want to do that process now? Because it seems to be a process that somebody else must do and actually come and present it so that we can see. Because it's quite a time-consuming process. Is there anybody that doesn't agree with that? Honourable members, there is no disagreement. And then, can we ask the Law Society? Can we ask the State Law Advisor to take that into account and subject Clause 17 as it presently stands, on which I think we have got almost general agreement? Can you subject that Clause 17 to the necessary scrutiny using these guidelines and bring us a Clause 17 without changing the text, without changing the text of Clause 17, but merely to rearrange Clause 17, what is already there, to rearrange it under these categories? If it becomes necessary, and I don't want to necessarily limit to you, but if it does become necessary to change the text, will you please limit that change to the absolute minimum? And will you draw our attention to it if that has to be done? Will one will understand that there may be a situation where you might just have to interfere with the text. But I think the idea is that you don't interfere with the text at all, as much as is possible. And then we shall consider this matter flagged until we get a report back on this. Now, if I might ask Mrs. Boyce, is this possible that we could get this back tomorrow? Or am I trying to be unreasonable here? Honourable members, can Ms. Boyce be allowed to answer that question?
Chairperson, what I will do is I will have a look at it and I will come up with something tomorrow, if it's fine by you.
Thank you so much. Honourable members, the net matter is flagged until tomorrow. Can I be informed whether there's anything else on the table, honourable members? Can we then go back to the definition of national security? You will recall that when we adjourned last night, I did ask you all to look at your notes and look at what you had said and look at what the minister had said and all those things when the minister had proposed to the committee after the public hearings. You will recall that. And I am sure you had pleaded for more time yesterday, that we start at 11. And I take it because you were going to diligently go and look at these things. So, we're back to national security and we'd like to finalize this thing now. Where do we stand on national security, honourable members? I have a document before me. The Honourable Abrasini has admitted that he is the author of this document. I don't know. The document seems to be amending a version. I'm not sure if this is the version that was submitted by the Honourable Landers. So for all intents and purposes, the document is exactly the same as yours, except where the amendments are shown. Now is there any other proposal on national security, honourable members? The honourable manager?
Chair, just to remind you that our proposal was essentially that we ought to delete the information peddling, exposure of state security matter, and exposure of economic, scientific, or technological secrets, etc. That would be our departure point for this discussion.
Honourable man, you seem not to have heard me yesterday. I think it was not about discussion, it was about meaningful contribution to the. You made that point yesterday, the petals must come out. Is there anything new? Okay. Honourable members, they don't like the petals. Now, I don't know Honorable Landers, you yesterday said you didn't have your ANC2 document with you. But I see your ANC2 document covers very much to a large extent what is in the proposal that you put on the table yesterday. Honorable Fihela?
I think, Chair, the bone of contention yesterday was the question of the peddling. And information peddling and espionage. I'm not sure. Yeah. So I think what we need to do then is to elaborate. That is, on our side, to elaborate on why we say information peddling must be part of this. Otherwise, they are accepting all the other items. That is the
honorable members. Can you take this debate on national security a bit faster now? If you want a understanding of what information peddling means, you might not agree. I'm quite willing to give you my view of what information peddling might not be the best view. But if you are happy, I can give you. I have been dealing with these peddlers for some time in the JSC, so we know exactly who they are and what they do. The JSCI, the Joint Standing Committee. Sorry. I understand that the minister's presentation also captures. But let me give you. And you might be interested in this. And this is my view. Information peddling means A, the deliberate distortion of information or facts and presenting it to the security services or a member of the security service referred to in Chapter 11 of the Constitution. With the intention of or which has the effect of prejudicing or destabilizing the security of the Republic. Or B, the fabricating of information and thereafter distributing or publishing it or allowing it to be distributed or published with the intention of or which has the effect of prejudicing or destabilizing security of the Republic. Now that should give you some idea of what it is that we are talking about. This is the act of peddling. Obviously the person doing this thing would be the peddler. Now the phenomenon is not a strange one, it's not an unreal one. This is not based on supposition, it's based on fact. These people actually do exist, and they actually do these things. They do distort information, and they do present it. Because you must remember, security services very often and very to a large extent rely on the gathering of information, and very often this information comes from people, comes from sources. And very often these sources are they are strange people. And they do strange things. And you don't know that they are strange people. And you're not aware that the things that they are doing is strange. And so you take this information in good faith. In fact, you got told by this informant office information, peddler, that there is going to be an attempt by somebody to overthrow your country, and they are actually going to be using foreign forces to do that. And this thing has been going on throughout the world. It's been going on particularly in the SADC area, and it has been causing a very destabilizing effect on political stability in our neighboring countries. And if we had not been such a strong democracy, we ourselves would have been victims of this type of behavior, information peddling. So, honorable members, that is perhaps to assist you. Now, remember, this is to assist you to understand the definition, or to assist me with concluding on this definition of national security. The Honorable Abrasini, and then the Honorable Swartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First and foremost, thank you for this telling us what it is. I tried and I sent a document to the secretary yesterday, this morning, and to some of you yesterday. I tried to find out myself what it is, and the expression is not present in two of the major dictionaries of the English language, the Webster and I think the Oxford, for which I sent you links, and is not described in the Wikipedia. So within not polite and cultivated society does not exist. The only hits I found on Google, if you Google definition of information peddling, arise out of these very proceedings. So it seems that as far as cyberspace is concerned, to the extent it is a reflection of reality, this expression exists because we are conceiving it and discussing it here. Were it not, linguistically would not exist. So there is a great need to define it, and thank you for your having defined it. Looking at the definition you gave us, there are a couple of issues, and they are different. The first issue is the position of this concept within the definition of national security. You identified it as a problem. Does it go within the definition of national security? I would like, if I may, to draw your attention to section 40, to clause 40 of the bill, which deals with this very matter as you defined it. It says provision of false information to national intelligence structures. And it says any person who provides information to a national intelligence structure that is false or fabricated, knowing that it's false or it's been fabricated, is guilty of offense and liable to conviction or imprisonment for a period no less than 3 years, but not exceeding 5 years, subject to 1/6, which is the reduction of minimum sentencing for good reasons. So, in this bill, we already make this a crime, and I will speak to this a little later as why it shouldn't be. Now, we are dealing with the definition of national security, which tells us it is the fundamental criterion on the basis of which classification of information is made. Irrespective of the merits and how bad the problem it is, my first submission is that it is illogical to have this as a criteria of classification. You don't classify information for the purpose of preventing information peddling, as you define it. Makes no sense. It doesn't fall. It's a non sequitur. You don't classify information for that purpose. It could be something bad for the Republic, but it cannot be. It's one of the things that the bill addresses. And that's my first submission. My second submission, which has got two parts. My first one is that it doesn't belong here. The second thing is, should we as legislature be concerned about, according to your own definition? And if you allow me, without calling me out of order, I would wish to say that it's quite pathetic. Each information service needs to deal with information and misinformation. That's their job, to sort out what's true and what's not true. It is their job to determine what is false. It is the name of the game to provide the false information, to criminalize the behavior so that their job is made easier. It's just it's something that I personally don't buy into. But the unintended consequences of the language you gave us, which is somehow much, much broader of Section 40. I mean, I could leave if we have a definition that information peddling refers to what is set up in Section 40. What you gave us is much broader. A journalist publishing information that Lesotho is about to invade South Africa, and you know there are plenty of information of this nature. I mean, if you look at some of the tabloids, they tell you that the aliens are about to take over the country, and it is in the eyes of the beholder to know whether it's to be relied or not to rely. It's false. They know it's false, but is that what would fall into the definition? People should be able to distinguish true and false without criminalizing it. There is lots of information which is part of our society on websites, conspiracy theories, great plots, all sorts of things which we are consumed by many, which in the eyes of many are false and fall within that definition. And each of them, depending on how you read them, could threaten the security of the Republic or not threaten to the security of the Republic if the information were true. So the effect on freedom of speech, freedom of opinion, freedom of communication, freedom of the press is so enormous that frankly it's not justified and justifiable merely to get intelligence service to do the job that they're called upon doing.
Chair, the same point, so I won't make demands on your time. What in your description adds anything to Section 40? Any person who provides information to a national intelligence structure that is false or fabricated, knowing that it is such, is guilty of an offense and liable, blah, 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 for up to five years. Now, what you have given us does not, in fact, add anything. We all understand what false information is. It does not add anything except the idea that it has to be done with the intention of or with the effect of prejudicing or destabilizing the security of the Republic. But there you are, you've got your offense. I tend to think with Dr. Ambrosini that you ought not to have your offense, because why should the security services, who are precisely there to sniffle at the truth, why should they be babied like this? Any journalist is constantly fed information which that journalist must sift, weigh, and to which they must apply their good judgment. Any MP, perhaps particularly any opposition MP, receives a constant flood of information, allegations, complaints, and all the rest, and you apply your mind and your own good judgment to sort the wheat from the chaff. And I don't really understand why the security services, therefore, should enjoy this protection. But, I mean, I for one would be willing to look at possibly retaining the offense if you would be so good as to abandon its inclusion in the definition where it properly has no logical place. Thank you.
Honorable members. Yes, Honourable
Mayor. Chair, I think all the arguments have been made and they've been sound, but there's one argument that we haven't considered, and it arises from the presentation on information peddling. If you are concerned about the prejudice or the effect of destabilizing the state, it is not the information peddlers that have the effect of prejudicing, if you like, or destabilizing the state. It's the intelligence services themselves who are deeply politicized and are not sufficiently professional to be able to sort the disinformation from information. And for that reason, I think that this sub-clause should be deleted from the definition.
Honorable Mania, Honorable Smuts, and Honorable Abedesini, I can understand that you would like the information peddlers to be deleted. I can understand that. No, yes, that's really what the argument is. But I really think that your arguments are, you cannot compare untruths that are passed off to a member of parliament or some person on a sidewalk who's been told some stupid lie. You cannot associate that with some person that has passed on information to the security service with a specific intention. Because somebody that tells you that he doesn't like me, that's not going to affect. It can hardly be affecting national security unless I was the president and he had some evil intention against me. But when somebody tells your security service something and that person has specific intention that he set out here to destabilize, that's something different. How much times do you get information that is meant to destabilize the country? Well, that's the difference in your argument. You know, the Honorable Mania says that the Honorable Abrasini's argument is sound. How can it be sound when it's based on such illogical suppositions and propositions? It's
logical about my argument.
Honorable members, if you don't like peddling, yes, Honorable, do you want to help me here, Honorable Fifla?
I think understandable that an ordinary person can give an information to the police, wrong information, and distort it deliberately. It has happened many a time to say that there is a crime happening at certain place, and then police run to that place. But when it is done by a trained person in the intelligence to give information that is false, deliberately, that's something different. You know, it makes me think of what happened in Germany sometime. You know, there was a minister of propaganda called Goebbels. He was saying that if you repeat a lie, time and again repeat that lie, it becomes accepted by people. Minister of propaganda. So he was an expert in lying, as it is. It means he was accepted because he was a minister. Now, then I'm saying, therefore, that once somebody belongs to the intelligence and he gives a serious information that this thing is very, very important, it's a secretive thing, and you have to be aware of the danger that is coming in, it's informing now the government, then it's going to be taken as truth because it's trained to protect the country. And therefore, if he sees that now there is danger to the country, then it's going to be accepted. That is what we call peddling.
The Honorable Mania, and then the Honorable Abrasini, the Honorable Sons.
Chair, I think we need to be very careful here. I mean, your argument is that the difference is that security services could or may receive disinformation with the intention to destabilize the state. That is your argument. Well, the point is that one would hope that our intelligence services would have a level of professionalism that would be able to recognize that fact and deal and recognize the information as disinformation. But even if that were not, the other argument, Chair, is that there's no evidence that information peddlers are handing information to the intelligence services with the intention of destabilizing the state. There was nothing I recall in the minister's presentation to that effect. What there was a suggestion that information peddlers had handed information or disinformation to the intelligence service with a view to perhaps destabilizing the unity of the ruling party. Now, that is an entirely different matter. And what we are doing here is we are trying to legislate to retain or maintain unity in the ruling party. But a combination of information peddlers and an unprofessional security structure is the problem.
Becoming personal now, Mr. Mania. I reminded you, and so did the minister, that the phenomenon is an international one. It's not a South African problem only. So it's not about the ruling party. Follow up on what? But I'm still talking. You follow up later. The honourable members, if you recall what the minister said, he had drawn your attention to a specific incident in the SADC area, where one of our neighbouring countries, there was now a minister in jail. Has not been prosecuted yet because of the information that information peddlers had forwarded the president of that country. And now, once the person had been arrested, the information peddlers wouldn't come forward to give evidence in court. Now, I don't want to get into the debate on the, if you don't like the definition because it was offered because you didn't understand the what's name. It was not offered as a definition that should be inserted here. It was given, it was offered to give those of you that do not have the benefit of working in this environment some idea of what we were talking about. You should have already captured what the phenomenon is about when the minister came to give us the presentation, because he came to give the presentation specifically so that those people that do not serve on the Intelligence Committee could get some idea of what this phenomenon was all about. I was just trying to assist you now at this late stage and to remind you. Now, if you don't like what I said to you, that's fine. You've already made it clear that you don't like that particular part of information peddling in the definition of national security. Now, I think that point will have to be noted. I don't think you can take that point any further. At some stage, we are going to have to get a definition of information peddling in order to give the effect to the definition of national security. Now, Honourable Mania, and then the Honourable Landers. Do you agree with that, Honourable Mania? The point that has been taken now, I take it's a point of order, is that the Honourable Abrasini was first, and the Honourable Swartz was second, and then yourself, and then Mr. Landers. Can we? And then the Honourable Kutsi. And then the Honourable Van Wyk. Sorry about that. Honourable Abrasini.
Mr. Chairman, I rise at Martin Seated. Yes. To be 100% in agreement with the Honourable Frickler. And I think that his proposal should be accepted and carried through. was very clear, and he said this is a crime committed by a specific type of people who are trained, and because of it, it's a threat on national security. So if we need to move in that direction, my alternative to the deletion is to do what the Honorable Frickler so clearly suggested, to make this a specific crime applicable only to members of the intelligence apparatus. Internal, domestic, and foreign intelligence apparatus. So they do it because of the training, the post, the trait that has been so clearly identified. And if that is what is meant, and what should be meant if we go with the Honorable Frickler, then we are dealing with a different animal altogether, and I support that. Secondly, this very debate, again, highlights the need of defining this thing. And to a certain extent, it is unfair that you all put forward a legislative proposal with words which have no specific meaning in the language we use, and fall back on a definition which is written on your desk, Mr. Chairman, and to assist us to understand things that neither Google nor Wikipedia carry in any way or form. And that is part of the problem. And I think that in a matter of this nature, it's insensitive, Mr. Chairman, for you to suggest, if I may say so, that our objection is noted, and you will do as you wish, and carry on. We want it. It needs to be there. Whether it makes sense or doesn't make sense, too bad. We are going to have it. I mean, it is not as meaning, no, Mr. Manier, myself, and whoever else speaks that is raising this concern. This is a concern raised by the country, and we have no particular political agenda in raising it. We're just trying to be rational and conduct what should be appropriate legislation written in language that everyone can live with beyond the intelligence community.
The Honorable Swartz.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I don't know whether we're going to find each other. We've spent a lot of time discussing this. But, Chair, I want to take you back to our initial documents and my definition of national security, which was very similar to the majority party's definition, save for the 4, 5, and 6, those information peddling, exposure and exposure. And I thought at that stage that we were very close to each other, but we seem to be quite far apart now, regrettably. The issue of information peddling, I was going to suggest, similar to what Dr. Ambrosini said, let's make it an offence if it is such a concern. If it is such a problem, the question arises, why did the minister, when he introduced the bill, not include it in the bill as tabled? In the definition of national security. It is not specifically, I've checked it, there's no specific reference to that. And so it seems that the minister at that stage did not consider such a, whilst it is an important consideration and something that needs to be canvassed, that it was not so important that it needed to be included in this definition for the purposes of classification. I fully appreciate that one can deal with that as a possible offence, and maybe that is the way to look at it. Similar, the exposure of a state security matter and the exposure of economic, scientific, those are very broad aspects that have now been introduced. I'm trying to understand where we've moved from those initial discussions that we had around the definition of national security, and we seem to have form of agreement related to hostile acts, terrorism, espionage, sabotage, violence, and those aspects, as which is very similar to the bill as tabled. So, Chair, I don't know how much longer we can spend trying to find each other. We might need to move on, and then once we've looked at the whole bill, we can see the context of how it all fits in. But we could relook at this issue. But my concern is that we have, in fact, taken a step backwards in the broadness of this definition, and particularly relating to the 5 and 6, as I indicated briefly yesterday, the exposure of economic issues related to development, economic development. It is very, very broad, and I don't know how we're going to... That opens the door again for any state organ that is not within the security cluster that we agreed that this should cover to then apply. Well, I am the economic development department, and this covers me, and therefore I want my documents to be classified. And I think, Chair, that is the concern with this very important definition, that we are, in effect, broadening the ambit of the Act again to again possibly include state organs that we did not want to include by an opt-in option that they will now have, where previously, with a very narrower definition of national security, it was very clear that they would not be included. So I ask you just to bear that, and particularly to consider the possible creation of an offence to deal with information peddling. Thank you, Chair.
The Honourable Mania, then Landers, and then the Honourable Kutsi, and after that, Honourable Van Wyk.
Chair, I thought your opening comments and on information peddling, defining it basically, I think this discussion is a useful discussion. But in your last comment, you said that information peddling is an international phenomenon. How is it dealt with in other jurisdictions? And why is it that information peddling does not seem to arise in any other jurisdiction that I know of security legislation?
Is that all, Honourable Mayor? The Honourable Landers?
Chairperson, we've had an informal discussion amongst ourselves, members of the ANC, and we'd like an opportunity to go away and think about our definition. That doesn't say we agree with everything the opposition has said. We do acknowledge the attempt, certainly, by the Honourable Ambrosini, who took our definition and tried to improve on it. We acknowledge that. And we've listened to the comments and the debate that has taken place on the matter now. And that's all we're asking for now, Chairperson. And ask then, if that is agreed, that we move on with your permission and deal with what is contained in Chapters 8 and 9 of the bill.
I have made it clear that the Honourable Kutsi and Honourable Van Wyk also wanted to be heard. Can we first, Honourable Kutsi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the light of what Honourable Saunders just said, Landers has said, I would like to withhold what I'm going to say after we come back with a new proposal. Thank you.
The Honourable Van Wyk.
Listen, while I agree with the Honourable Landers and I support that as well, I just think it is important that we don't leave this room thinking that there is nothing like that. I mean, I don't quite agree with the Honourable Ambrosini that the only reference to information peddling comes from this committee on Google, etc. I actually went into it now and I can actually quote a couple of articles, amongst them U.S. scientists charged with peddling nuclear information. There's a second concept that's developing throughout the world, that one of influence peddling as well. So I just don't want us to leave this room thinking that it does not exist. It does exist. And I agree with the Honourable Landers, let's go back, let's look at some of it, but I think we would be naive if we sit here and we believe that it's an imagination a figment of imagination. It's not. It's a reality. It's happening, and it's happening throughout the world. It's not unique to South Africa alone.
Annelise, whether in her search she came across the other new concept that Dr. Ambrosini invented last night when he sent us an email under the heading Information Pebbling.
I actually
shortly after our discussion on the
I was actually thinking that maybe why he didn't find it on Google, because he was looking for pebbling.
can I defend myself?
Okay, that's enough, thank you. Thank you, honorable members. Behave yourselves now. Honorable Abbasini?
Thank you. Now, just for the record, I have sent to some of you whose address I had, and to the committee secretary, the Google page for information, tabling, properly spelled, not on the subject line. And perhaps the Honourable Frank can do the same with their Google search. But just a marginal point, but I think it's important because, I mean, this is at the moments in which there is disagreement. The Honourable Lander says we heard the opposition, we will not do what the opposition, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, this is an unusual context. I mean, there are three parties now, and times four parties, and we happen to express a common view. And we are different parties, different minds. We don't caucus. Why is that? Because I... No, we don't. I mean, I haven't spent caucus. I mean, we haven't caucus. I'll tell you. If they've caucus, they haven't invited me. What is really happening here, I mean, this is not the opposition. We are acting as your sounding board, because I think that there are no political differences. You bear the responsibility of government, and that by itself creates a different perspective. We don't bear the responsibility of government and may be more closely attuned to the interests of civil society. And in this dialectic, we are a sounding board. We're not here to oppose you. I just wanted to make this, I'm not speaking for myself, but just reading what is happening. I don't think that anyone here wants to oppose for sake of opposition.
Honorable members, I've asked you many times to look at this question of national security so that the contributions are constructive. And we have spent a lot of time, the Honorable Swat has reminded you that at some time or another there was almost consensus on this definition. We had structured a definition when we referred to the Johannesburg principles, and we referred to a whole range of other things. And we actually came up with a definition which we had parked many, many months ago. And now, many months ago, we are back to debating this thing from grassroots level now. I think yesterday the Honorable Van Wyk was trying to draw the attention of the Honorable Members to what really is happening outside there in the world, that the thinking, that the understanding of national security has changed, and that there is a much broader understanding. Whether we needed to introduce that here or not, that's another matter. But at least it indicates that there was some research taking place on the matter. You are the members of the committee that have been tasked to deal with this very serious thing. And if you are restricted in your thinking, if you are not sure about where it is that we need to go, then you need to do the necessary research. And I've encouraged you in the past to
to look at things, to come forward and draw our attention to what it is out there, other than what we have already been asked to look at in the public hearings. So I again say to you, honourable members, you have said that this is perhaps the most important part of the bill. And I must just say that I see that the way the thing gets debated doesn't indicate that it has the seriousness or the importance that you have attached to it. So, it seems now that you want this particular matter flagged, and you want to go and reflect on it once more. So fine, honourable members, let us go and reflect on this thing again. But please, when you come back now, let it be there, let there be an understanding. You know that national security is going to be settled on the basis of what you want it to be. I just want to finish off by saying, in the budget speech, those of you that are interested in budget speeches, well, I made a lot of reference to national security, particularly in the context that the Honourable Van Wyk raised it. And it was for the specific reason. It was to generate within those minds of those people that were serving on this committee some thought that would render them to go into some research on the matter. Honourable Smuts, can I hear you?
Thank you, Chair. Now, I just wish to agree with the view that this decision is, as we all know, of fundamental importance. I think you do well to remind us that there was a point earlier on where we were all just about ad idem on the clause, with the exception of the inclusion of information peddling. But that also explains to you, sir, why Mr. Mania chose to start off his contribution on this by pointing out that since that time, your proposal has acquired two other new things, which were not there when we very nearly reached agreement, with the exception of peddling. And they are the exposure of a state security matter, that's a new thing, and exposure of economic, scientific, etc. And that is precisely why we isolate them and say we have to talk about these things because we are not happy with them. For the rest, we are in agreement. This thing has got to be sorted out.
Honourable members, that is the final word on the national security for the timing. This thing is going to be flagged. We will come back to it as we come through to the bill again. And by that time, I would imagine that you would have formulated your ideas on national security. If you do come to an agreement, before we get to that point, I would suggest that you circulate what agreement it is so that we can deal with it immediately. Otherwise, we will not get back to this particular definition until we get to the definition clause, which is the last part that we will deal with when we deal with this bill. Would be to go to the definition section. Honourable Landers, you wanted to be heard.
Chairperson, can we move to Chapter 8 and Chapter 9 of the bill, please?
Honourable Landers, I can offer you something better than Chapter 9 and Chapter 10. I can offer you tea now if you insist. But if you insist on going on with your proposal. Honourable members, we are going to break for tea. It is now almost 3:15. We will come back exactly at 4:25.